on Lunch Hour, talking about what you want to be talking about. Light Fare,
with a serious spin, whether it be sports, faith, parenting,
balance, relationships, education, community, coaching,
starting over, how do you reboot yourself,
ministry, relevant, resonant, and real.
Whatever it is, we want to talk about it.
Call in, ask us questions, be anonymous.
Senior moments.
What would you tell your teenage self?
Whatever it is, join us on Wednesdays.
Wildin' Out Wednesdays?
Absolutely.
Join us. I'm Jackie.
I'm Karen.
Write it down. 1450 AM, WOL.
Noon to 1.
Hey, this is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. Alonzo, you might be with Rev. This is an interesting time that we're living in, and what we want to do, we have some fairly exciting guests calling in. Jackie's going to be with us shortly. But what we want to do is invite you to give us a call at 1-800-450-7876. We're going to talk to Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. this afternoon and discuss some of the things. We had a new initiative by the White House today talking about minimum wage and raising that up to $10.10. But one of the things that we really want to keep in mind is that even with that $10.10, the United States is still behind at least three or four other developed countries. And that begs the question, right now we're at $7.25 an hour, and his initiative or executive order is only for contractors. They're going to be going up to the 10-10. Oh, the contractors are going up to 10-10. But one of the things that we want to bear in mind, that even with our 725, that we have approximately nine developed countries that are over $7.25. And I think Corey's on the line with us so that we can kind of discuss this a little bit more. Hi, Corey. How are you?
I'm great, Karen. How are you?
Good, good. Glad you could join us.
Thanks. Glad to always be here with you guys.
Great, great, great. What we're doing, Reverend Jackson's going to join us in a little bit. But what I was just kind of leading in with respect to the minimum wage executive order that the president signed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, how that's going to help to some degree. But I also think that it's also going to be quite a bit of more fuel to the fire in Congress to try and get on the dime with respect to the necessity. When you have countries like Canada, New Zealand, and Belgium that have higher minimum wage laws, it seems kind of futile to make the argument that it's better to have a country that's military ready but doesn't care for its labor or its constituency.
I agree, and I agree with you 100%, Karen, and I think you're right. I think the battle in Congress, and if we're even looking at the unemployment, the failure of the Senate to pass the unemployment extension, we're looking at this conversation taking place over our country on what are we defining as the quality of life and how is our country supporting those individuals who are citizens in it. And so as the president takes executive action to raise minimum wage for federal contractors, I and I'm sure the nation will be very interested to see how it plays out on the stage, especially in our legislature.
Yeah, the other thing too is that when we talk about whether it's minimum wage or the new initiative that he has for young minority boys, he's making strides because he's coming a lot, quite a bit of criticism with respect to, let's say, the actions that have been done and the support that has been given within the African American community.
I agree 100%. I'm very interested in seeing how this is going to play out, because every president gets its time of praise and its time of criticism, and there's no doubt that President Obama has taken his fair share of criticism, and in his last term, I think people are eager to see what he is rolling out, especially with his State of the Union, where he expressed that he will champion some of these issues that people are really looking forward to, whether it be economic stability of lower minority or lower income persons, or whether it is assisting in these urban communities where the plight of African-American males is despair at best. And I think that some people, you know, are, well, why hasn't the president, you know, why didn't he do it earlier, or what's going on now? But we're eager to see what the president has with this agenda.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, you know, there's, when you're getting the kind of pushback back and forth that he's been receiving from Congress, it makes one wonder. You know, there's a level of limitation, there's a level of expectation. You have to balance the two, and it's always a push-pull. Yet, he's not getting the level of cooperation that you would think would be the norm, or at least a level of normality between the two bodies.
I agree 100%. I think that this is worse than the Clinton Gingrich years, where, you know, we have that whole stall. This is just an unlevel precedence of stalwarts between the Congress and the executive, and I think that the president is very clear in his stance that he will do whatever he has to take to see progress, and I think that we as a country have to look at that legislature and look at, you know, while we're being very critical of the president, we've got a Congress who has failed to pass budgets numerous times, has left this country in the dark, and now we're going back into, you know, the economies of these local small communities where they are suffering majorly. And, you know, while I'm certain that the increase in the minimum wage for contractors does not affect everyone, it's definitely a start in the right direction.
Right, right. And before I forget, Corey, can you give our listeners a little bit about your background with respect to this area and other areas? I know you're very instrumental and, you know, very active in what you do.
Well, I always appreciate being on with you guys, Karen. My background, of course, I'm a Howardite. My Howard University grad, but I did a tour with Hillary Clinton on the steering committee for Washington, D.C., and when President Obama came over and did his bid for the White House, went and supported our president, and firmly believe that we've got a country going in the right direction. Consulting background, operations and political consulting, and now is the time, I think, where we see a younger audience getting quite active in activism and community engagement. And our challenge right now really is keeping that fire, because I think even with myself, when I was at Howard and when I was on the Board of Trustees at Howard, we had so many students engaged and ready and willing to get in these conversations regarding the president and moving us in the right direction and going forward. But how do we keep capitalizing on that movement? How do we support this president, support this change that we want to see globally, but especially here in our local communities? And I think that's where the ticket is, going, you know, championing our local communities so that we can see national change.
Yeah, and it starts there. You know, we Jackie, who won't be joining us today, is we understand, you know, we always talk about the down ballot races and the critical importance of, you know, not taking time off, and they're just as important to come out in those state elections and those local elections, even more so in a lot of respect than our federal election. And, you know, all too often it's the reverse. Everybody turns out for our federal, but very, very few or not as many turn out in those state elections. And that's where things are happening in our governor's races, in our state senate and assembly races and delegate races, and in our mayoral races. You know, that's where we have to keep the pressure up and on to move and to make change where it needs to go.
And that's 100% right. I think we pressure, not even so much. The reality is we see these huge presidential races, and we see these national Senate and House races. But the reality is if we don't as a country engage on our local level with our councilwomen, our councilmen, our city legislature. Those are the things that affect us on a daily basis, and those are the things that change Washington, because those who we send up to Washington to represent us have to first understand where we come from. It's not enough to say you represent 30 counties and two major cities if you don't know the cities. And I think so often we've got these people who get up here and campaign on a slogan but don't campaign on a reality. Mm. And that's what we as a people, as a country, have to understand, is that it's all well and fine. You know, it's great grandeur and it's great splendor until it's time for these tough decisions to come, like extending unemployment for people who have been hit so severely by this economy.
Yeah, I don't get the thinking, Corey. I really don't. With respect to holding up unemployment extensions for folk who are actively looking to be employed, even though our unemployment numbers are at a record low to a large extent at 6-point-something%, why not extend it so that folk can at least live while they're trying?
Go ahead. You're 100%. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's.
I don't know what else you can say to it. You know, when you think of that, and you try to deal with, and you think of this, these challenges that we're faced, and yeah, we're looking all right. It's looking good on paper, but we've got to realize, just because that number says that we're down to a certain percentage of unemployment, there are tons of people who have said, you know what, I've given up, I've applied hundreds of jobs, and I'm withdrawing myself from the workforce. And that gives us a false balloon. It gives us the thought that, hey, everything's going well. But when in reality it is that these people who have, you know, said, hey, I'm throwing in the towel, are no longer counted in that percentage of active job-seeking participants.
Exactly. And then you have a number of folk who are opting for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 part-time jobs to make up for a full-time job. And it's still, you know, and then we don't extend the unemployment benefits. Then we balk on raising the minimum wage. How is a person to live? How is a person to survive? What is a person to do, particularly when they're, you know, single-headed homes, they're the primary breadwinner, they've been laid off through no fault of their own. It's an interesting dynamic, and in my opinion, warped thinking to think that this is an arguable issue, that there is a reputable side that says, no, you know, we're not going to extend it. Let people fend for themselves. No, we're not going to raise the minimum wage. Let people fend for themselves. And we're supposed to be a compassionate country.
I'm telling you, you would never know. And that's, I think, our challenge is. This Congress has an agenda in front of them like no other Congress, and the failures of them to address it are amazing. We've got the deficit. We've got the debt. We've got dealing with the income inequality. We have got race relations, you know, in an age where it seems like we should be absolving, and getting over this hurdle, where we still have got issues like the Trayvon Martins that are now seemingly I don't want to say copycat incidents, but we're seeing these things come to light. Mm-hmm. More and more and more and more, and you got to wonder what's going on and how are we addressing this, and what is the statement that we as a nation are saying on all of these things?
Exactly. We're going to go to a break, and hopefully soon we'll be joined by Reverend Jackson, Corey. But the other thing I want to talk about during the interim is, you know, we have Rand Paul and company now filing this class action suit against the president over this whole national security bit. But I want to talk about the precedent of that on the other side of the break. All right?
Fantastic. All right, fantastic.
Cool, hold on. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. Give us a call at 1-800-450-7876 to join the conversation. We're back. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. Jackie is celebrating an early birthday, I found out. Corey, and Corey, you're sitting in, so I appreciate your time today to join us. I was getting all these text messages in between because I was asking the engineer, I'm like, well, where's Jackie? Where's Jackie? And I'm getting all these text messages and from her nieces that are saying, we have a special surprise for her. She's not coming today. So I'm like, no problem. No problem. We'll do what we do.
We'll see if we can get her on later.
So it's all good. Oh, we have a caller. Doctor?
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, interesting conversation you're having there.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm a concerned scientist. I'm also at Howard University. I was on the faculty for a number of semesters there.
Oh, wonderful.
And also retired scientist from NASA, got a Space Flight Center, an African-American physicist and scientist who was the only one looking like me in the branch of a picture, some odd scientist there.
Well done.
Over half of those are from Europe, from Russia, Japan, elsewhere, and so forth. And you think things are going well, but since Martin Luther King, you think like they're doing worse now.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing is, one of the topics that you just alluded on, the fact is that we have to get back to those polls again, you know, in this upcoming primary election that's coming right now, about 9 months from now.
Yes.
It's very important. This is probably one of the most important elections we're going to have in a long time.
Yes,
And we successfully elected this president twice.
Mm-hmm.
And but what happened, we successfully did that. We did our job well. We stood in lines and long line polls and so forth across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? We missed the boat when the primary elections came up 2 years later.
Yeah.
We missed out on that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why we are dealing with this stuff that we're dealing with right now. And one of the major problems that people don't talk about enough, and I think you guys, you say information is power.
Mm-hmm.
What you reckon we could duplicate what you're doing on your program 1,000-fold, we could solve some of these problems across the nation.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
That's what it is. Unfortunately, the old-fashioned AM broadcast station, which is the amplitude modulation system, like, for example, the transmitting system in Washington, D.C., and many of the large cities across the country. These systems they do very well, but without the high-power clear channel systems, like, for example, the right-wing broadcast media with the big powerful 50,000-watt voice channel system, if you didn't have that much power, you don't reach out enough. The problem here is, we're not reaching the masses of people that we should be reaching because of the fact if you stay on this old-fashioned system, the old-fashioned broadcast system, we don't go that far out into the range of the nation, out into the countries and so forth. And going across the nation, driving down north, driving down 95, going from north to south, you'll find rude awakening, you'll realize the information is not there. And unless you're in the big cities, you might pick up one of the race broadcast stations where you're on right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Baltimore, you may pick up WLB in Baltimore, or if you're in New York, you can pick up a number of stations there. But out in the Midwest and in the nation, the information is just not there. So we have to do something about that.
Well, two things, Doc. I want to thank you, first of all, for calling in and the kind words that you had for us. We try to uplift and inform on this particular show, as does 1450, where they say information is power, and truly it is. But the other thing that I want to touch on, kind of linking back, Corey, to the doctor's experience, is that all too often, when you have, I know a very good friend of mine works for NIH, and she's around scientists all the time, but there are so few and far between of folk that look like us in those facilities. It speaks to, and they hire from within. They hire their friends.
And that is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
we are too few, and our voices are not there, even in the large facilities in government and private industry. We are outnumbered. And matter of fact, I integrated most of the areas I went into. I have always done well, but as a young guy coming up, I was a lot more militant than I am now. But I look back over my old papers and my old jobs, and I look back on myself. Gee, I would raise issues with things that I thought, you know, now I didn't think much of it. But then, you know, I would do little things that have to be, I would stand up for my rights. You have the civil rights and all those things with Martin Luther King. We knew where we were going back in those days. But I think our young people are losing focus right now. And people like your voice, you can help, like, get these people together and make sure our young people understand where we are and where we're going, because we lose sight of this thing.
Thank you.
I'm very excited about that.
Thank you. Well, and we're going to be joined shortly. Corey, thank you. Thank you, Doctor, for calling us. But Janae Ingram is going to join us, who is the executive director of the National Action Network. And one of the things that, as we know, that's the organization that Reverend Al Sharpton founded. And what I applaud him for is that he's really surrounded himself with smart young people that kind of speaks to where we're trying to go. So, Doctor, thank you for joining us. We're going to bring Janae on now.
Information for me, please.
Sure.
Yeah, give my contact information offline.
Okay, hold on. Sure, if you hold on, someone will get that from you. Okay, Janae?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Hey, lady, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you all?
We're doing well. Jackie's not joining us today. We have Corey Briscoe in her stead. Jackie's celebrating an early birthday.
Oh, wonderful.
So I was going to tease her, tell you the truth, Janae, because not only are you from Jersey like me.
Yes.
But you are a soror as well. So
yes.
Oh, my Lord.
I am happy that AKAs are all in the house, because every time, Jackie's a Delta, so I'm always getting Delta, and I'm like, oh, no. And I was so happy, and I can't rip her about it because she's not here, so I have to play the tape, but thank you for joining us.
Please let her know we were here together, and she was outnumbered for a hot moment.
But we're talking about the importance, Janae, of the down-ballot races. That's where we are right now in the conversation, and one of our callers was speaking to how, you know, we got the president elected twice, and everybody showed up in 2008 and 2012, but we dropped the ball in 2010.
Yes.
And now here we are in 2014, and how do we get, I know that you're really involved in, you know, the get out the vote, and as well as Stand Your Ground, but we'll get to, but how do we re-energize? What is National Action Network doing? How can we participate? And we're going to invite our listeners to give us a call so that they can have any questions for you as well, too, at 1-800-450-7876.
Absolutely. Janae? We are obviously working on this. We've been talking about this. We actually haven't stopped talking about this, I should say. Mm-hmm. In 2012, we did a national voter engagement tour that took us to states all across the country where we really rallied voters and educated them on the issues and the importance of the 2012 election. But since then, we haven't stopped talking to people, and we've done a lot both with our national convention and a lot of work on the ground in states like Florida and Ohio and Texas and other states that have had issues with discriminatory or restrictive voter laws that have been introduced. But just really rallying people to understand the importance of every election.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up in April, we'll have our annual convention that'll take place in New York from April 9th through the 12th. And obviously, we can't be in an election year and not talk about and focus on the election. And so that's going to be a big part of our annual convention. People can find out information on our website, which is nationalactionnetwork.net. And they can register. It's a free convention, so we encourage people to join us. But we're really going to launch after our convention. We're going to return our attention to the voter engagement tour that focuses heavily on, again, educating people about the issues and the political process, because I think that sometimes people don't understand the importance of those down ballot races. They think that the president sort of manages and controls everything, and so we have to educate our communities that, you know, when the president does something, he also needs the support of Congress. And a lot of times when you're voting for a congressional representative, you're not just voting for someone who just does things in your state. You're voting for somebody who essentially has national power. And yes, they may be from your state, but their power extends to the national sphere. And so we want to encourage people to get out and think about these elections and see, look at the gridlock that has existed over the years, and really address it by turning out in 2014.
Exactly. The other thing, I know we talk heavily, Janae, here about the importance of our down ballot races. And I agree with you that, you know, a lot of it is an education process. And then, you know, there's one school of thought, well, how much education do we need to do? You know, it's the same thing every 2 years. But my position is, and our position here is, we keep talking about it. We keep doing it until it's done. And right now, it's the job is not finished. When you look at, you know, how they're successfully trying to change the conversation, well, the president should be doing this, the president needs to be engaging us, and you look at the unprecedented backlog and back and forth that have that has taken place between these two branches, the only recourse is to let your voice be heard come November.
You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. We hear the same thing, and it is that through the education process, we hear people saying, well, the president hasn't done this. People generally still support the president, but they think that he needs to do more. But a lot of times we have to say to people, because we didn't turn out in 2010 the way that we needed to, in a lot of ways his hands are tied, and we're seeing him now come out and have to do more executive orders and address things through his office the best way that he can, but he still has to rely on Congress. And if we don't talk about the role of Congress, or if people don't understand the role that Congress plays, then that's the issue, and we need to address that issue.
You know, we're coming up on a quick break shortly, but the other thing too is now with Rand Paul and company, and I meant to go back to it, Corey, Rand Paul and company, you know, of this class action suit against the president over national security, whatever, you know, no one seems to recall that the first shot was fired by George Bush and Dick Cheney and the crew with respect to where we are in our national security.
There Patriot Act, you're right.
Exactly. That changed the game. And it had nothing to do with President Obama and his administration in by and large. The only thing he did was just reconfirm the folk. But the processes, the you can't even go get it, open up a checking account without giving over your life history anymore. That changed prior to him. So we're going to take a quick break, and if everyone can just sit tight for a moment, we're going to revisit that and talk about some other things on the other side. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We're joined today by Janae Ingram, who's the Executive Director of the National Action Network, and Corey Briscoe, who is a political strategist formerly with Howard University et al. So, folks, I want to talk a little bit about this whole national security class action suit, just very briefly. I don't want to delve into issues that we don't know, but just the implications of yet another thing for this president to deal with. You know, we have the threat of impeachment. Now we have them actually going forward with this. We have the Tea Party and all of its racial epithets formerly, but they say they don't exist anymore and they don't even remember them anymore. But the rest of us do. And now they've tried to water that down. We have the constant references of he's not our president. What else? What else is to be done?
Yeah.
Corey?
I agree. I'm telling you, we have got to take
and understand the climate of our democracy as it is unfolding. I mean, this is a president who has been handed several blows, first months, first days in office, dealing with critical things as they unfold. And even now, we look at some of the fallout. I mean, this is the president who's had to deal with the Supreme Court, who basically invalidated part of the Voting Rights Act. You know, this is a president who's got to deal with that. And when they say that, you know, when people say our president is not doing enough, this is a president in the State of the Union that basically scolded the Supreme Court for their decision on the Voting Rights Act. You know, we're in a different time period. And even with this Rand Paul issue over NSA, it's a I call these little things, they're just the political nuance, the political nuisances. They're political ploys that have been used over and over. If Rand Paul or any of the members of the Republican Party wanted to deal with overreach of NSA, it should have been dealt with under President Bush. This is the reality that the Patriot Act gave clear governmental oversight to our security and surveillances. President Bush at that time took overreaching control of those civil liberties, infringed on those basic civil liberties under the Constitution, and no one said anything. Now, this is the president who, you know, is now dealing with the muck that has been created, and all of a sudden, Rand Paul's Rand Pack wants to announce that, you know, hey, we're filing a class action lawsuit. The reality is if that party wants to be in touch with its people, it's got to stop playing these games, and that's just the reality. We're a country that in this season right now wants to see progress. We want to see economic change. We want to see fortitude. We want to see these things, unfolding, and we're not.
Janae, one of the things that we were talking about earlier, and I guess we're one of the few who still remember the government shutdown, and no one is threatening anything against Ted Cruz. But one of the things is with the executive order to increase minimum wage for federal contractors, that still leaves the United States with approximately 9 other developed countries that have a higher minimum wage than we do.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that we live in this land of, quote, promise, unquote, and yet people are still struggling to get by and to work a job that pays a decent and living wage. Mm-hmm. When we think about the federal minimum wage and it's not enough, even with the increase that we're talking about. It's great that we're having this conversation now. It's timely. It's time for us to address people being able to work and being able to make and create a life for themselves and for their families. Because for too many people, that's not happening. And so the thought that some people would try to fight getting a minimum wage to a respectable level makes absolutely no sense to me. I sometimes wonder, where do these people come from? Where is it that they think, why is it that an issue for people to make $10.10 an hour when we know that, the minimum wage that exists now is so much less than what it was since 1968. It's fallen, and it's below the poverty line for a family of two.
Exactly.
So a family of two can't even achieve the poverty line on the current minimum wage, mm-hmm. which is crazy to think.
Absolutely. And not to mention, though, Janae, on the heels of not extending unemployment.
Exactly.
What?
Exactly.
I'm telling you.
It's like there is a structure in this country that is seeking to create and further create a divide between the rich and the poor, between the haves and the have-nots. This thought of having the American dream and people wanting to build a better life, it seems that some don't want that to happen, or they only want it for certain individuals. And it's just something that we have to continue to work toward. And when it brings us back to the earlier conversation about why the midterm elections are so important, because we need to promote people who are going to protect those who cannot protect themselves, who are working every day but can't even make the poverty line for a family of two, or who are jobless but yet can't find the protection from the government to help them through that difficult period.
Exactly, exactly. And we cannot emphasize enough the importance of these down ballot races and getting out. It wouldn't it be wonderful, Janae and Corey, if this November we had the same number of lines that we had last November?
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great. And I think, you know, I know that a lot of us in the civil rights community are working for that. We want to see people, you know, obviously we don't want people to have to wait in line, but we want people to be as committed to this election because it is critically important. This election is probably just as important as the 2012 election in making sure that people have what they need from their government, that they can get minimum wage that looks like a living wage, that they can have their unemployment benefits protected, that, you know, all of these issues that we're seeing in the news right now. You talk about the Michael Dunn case that's going on right now and Stand Your Ground laws. The down ballot, that's another down ballot.
Exactly. I was getting ready to say that.
It's an issue.
Right.
You know, people don't realize their state legislatures, their state senators and their state representatives, they create those laws that exist in your state. And when we talk about all of these issues that are hurting and impacting our communities, these are all issues that will be decided in this 2014 election.
And even restructuring how we go about voting.
Absolutely.
That's on the state level.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And it's one of those things where we've seen, you know, with the elimination of Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, we've seen a lot of new laws start sprouting up. And, you know, the goal is to impact this election and the elections moving forward. If they can take away people's right to vote, then they take away your voice. They take away your ability to deal with these issues. And so we have to make sure that people are engaged and prepared no matter what the law is in your state. We know that there is this vacancy that exists, but there are still opportunities for people to vote, and that's another thing that we are addressing. We're working with other civil rights organizations at National Action Network to address the laws that are restricting people to vote to make sure that people can vote within the law.
And Janae, how awesome would it be if we could get beyond the points in which we're faced with creating these movements to get out the vote and create a culture, an educated culture, understanding the importance of these down ballot races and the educated status that the local legislators influence the daily living. How incredible would that be if we could change that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we are definitely working on that. And I think one of the things that we're doing, we have our national youth director who is 15. She's not voting age yet, but she is so passionate about this voting issue. And so getting the younger generation before they can start to vote. And we've been working with Education for a Better America and doing these high school tours where we're talking about college access and success. But a critical part of what we do through the program is not just talk about getting to college, but talking to them about the election issues, the electoral issues that they will deal with. So that way when they turn 18, it's not like we're thrusting them in a box and saying, here, now go vote, even though we haven't talked to you about voting until, you know, your 18th birthday. We're educating the younger generation now so that when they reach 18, they're already aware of the issues and thinking about what it means. So that's one of the things that we're doing. And so proud of our youth director, Mary Pat Hector, out of Atlanta. She's just a phenomenal superstar who's really taken the reins on it.
That's vitally important because I know even in some middle schools and high schools, like you said, before they're eligible to vote, they're having mock elections. So they're explaining the process while it's going on in real time so that folk understand the significance of it, why it's important, whose shoulders they're standing on in order to vote, so that when they're of age, they can do what they're inclined to do, however, whatever side of the aisle they decide to vote on. But I think it's important, and I commend you for having someone who's not of age yet as an organization. That's way ahead of the game, because all too often we forget, you know, that youth is the lifeline of any institution.
Absolutely.
Any organization. And if they're not engaged, your organization is dying. Point blank.
Absolutely.
You know, so we have to, you know, when we have those opportunities, engage our young people whenever and wherever possible. Because, you know, what's happening today affects them more really than it affects us.
Absolutely. You think about some of the laws that are created and how long they stay on the books. You know, you're absolutely right. It's going to affect them, and we want to put them in the best possible situation. We don't want them to have to deal with the things that we're dealing with. You know, I think that's the idea of any parent, or the desire of any parent or mentor or, you know, aunt, uncle, that you want the future generations, you want your nieces and nephews and your children and your mentees to be better off than you are. And so we're definitely looking to them to carry the torch.
Yeah, and then like you mentioned before, you know, when you talk about stand your ground in the Trayvon Martin case and now this Troy case, you know, that's the state is where these laws are made. This is where it happens. This is how it affects us. And if we had turned out, you know, who's to say that Trayvon may still be here?
Exactly.
You know, we have to think, you know, I think all too often, and we're going to go to a quick break. And I know, Janae, I know they promised you 20 minutes. If you can just hold on a little while longer.
Sure.
After the break. But all too often we forget that, you know, these laws that are on the books, you know, we have to realize their impact, as you said, down the road. You know, what happens now affects us down the road. And if we don't come out like we're supposed to, or like we should, then we have no one to blame but ourselves. And unfortunately, that's part of our reality as well. So, you know, National Action Network, you've been on the front lines with respect to voter engagement and the importance of getting out the vote. So, you know, we want to keep our listeners engaged. Turn it up. Just keep turning up and turn it up. You know, iron sharpens iron. So we'll be right back on the other side. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We're back. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We're on with Janae Ingram, the newly appointed Executive Director of National Action Network, and Corey Briscoe. Janae, when we left on the other side of the break, I wanted to get back to you and ask you, you know, what's spawned your activism? You know, at a very young age, to be involved. Same thing with you, Corey. You know, you two are, in my opinion, living role models, because you're in that, you know, that bracket of, you know, either engage or be disengaged. But you two opted for engagement.
Well, For me, I think just seeing issues in my community. So I'm originally from Camden, New Jersey, and, you know, grew up just seeing things that I thought were just wrong and, you know, unfair, and just seeing injustice really helped me just want to get in there and make a change. I felt like I could have that power. I had, you know, my dad would, when I was growing up, would tell me stories about being in the 70s and staging walkouts at his high school, or, you know, activism that happened at that time. And, you know, I had an uncle who did the same. He was very involved in social activism and social justice. And I would talk with him a lot. And I think those things coming together really encouraged me to realize that I could make a difference. I probably was born an activist, and just, you know, through that got sharpened my skills and staged a walkout in high school because of some of the lessons that my father and my uncle had told me about, and it just continued from there. And I think that's really helped me be in this spot, and it's become a life commitment that you know, I know a lot of people are motivated by money, and that's, you know, money's great, but I think for me, if I can leave this world in a better place, then that is more important than any amount of money that I could ever earn, because it means that I've created change and the legacy that I have will be more and last longer than any wealth.
Mm. Corey?
I agree wholeheartedly. I think Janae brings it home, and I think if we were to take a point out, those who have seen injustice or those who have experienced injustice are the best champions against injustice. And I think that seems so true for me. Born in Baltimore, Maryland, and then moving to South Carolina, experiencing the South and the North, and seeing injustice in both places. You look at Baltimore City, where the standard of education is dismal at best, and then you go to South Carolina, where the racism doesn't just sneak up on you, it's right there when you hit the state line. Those are the challenges that we face. And, you know, for me, it was born out of those two, and watching my own mother, a postal worker, experience injustice, and even to this day have to fight for what you know to be justly yours. Those are the challenges and the unsung stories that we hear over and over. And for me, then going to Howard University, a place that champions the social movement and justice, education is that fundamental principle that can be that change agent. You know, understanding what it is, understanding when we talk about even these common terms like the down ballot, what is that and how does that affect me and how does that affect my household and my society, and translating that into palpable and tangible action. That's been the challenge and cry of this younger generation. We've got tons of issues that the mom and dad generation have either put to the side or, you know, has caused. And we are now forced to deal with these things that are breaking apart at the seam our country, whether it's race relations or the economic downturn, or whether it's just understanding that or the fight for getting everyone the Commonwealth. That's our challenge, and that's what really started me getting so active. It was experiencing injustice, and once you've experienced, it's a taste you'll never forget.
Exactly. We have what some have called the conscience of the nation on the line with us now. Reverend Jesse Jackson, Senior. Reverend Jackson?
Reverend Jackson.
Hello?
Jesse Jackson.
How are you?
How are you?
Good. You're on with Jackie and Karen. You're on with Janae Ingram, who is Executive Director of National Action Network, and Corey Briscoe. And I appreciate you calling in. I know that you have an event in New York today with your Wall Street Project. But I wanted to have, you know, you say a few words about your thoughts on this minimum wage executive order and how it impacts.
I mean, the people ought to work in order to get paid for the work that they do. Today we have the disease of working poor people. People work, we can't pay their rent. Work, we can't send their children to school. Work, we can't afford public education. And that's not fair. So I think the president has made a move in the right direction.
Yes. And also, what about the importance of the down ballot races coming up in November? You know, that's where you have your stand your ground laws that come into being, and your other, you know, voter registration changes and things of that nature for changing the ways people can vote. You know, the importance of us getting out and realizing the importance of those races.
Those who want to deny us the right to vote never stop fighting to take it back. They stop trying to diminish it. They use gerrymandering, which is lying, they use annexation, at large, rogue person, and punishment. Now they're trying to reduce the number of days they can vote, trying to stop voting on Sunday. So they are kind of unrepentant in their quest. And not to be fair and just on the football field, they're going to be the playing field. Once you leave the ball field and you celebrate the touchdown, they're going to be fair and matters of the game.
Well, thank you, Reverend Jackson. I think our connection is a little bad, but I want to thank you for taking the time out, for sharing a few words with us, you know, in light of what you have going on in New York there and the important work that you do with the Wall Street Project.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Janae and Corey, when we were talking about advocacy and engagement and things of that nature, one of the things that struck me as well, and one of the reasons why we created this show, is that everyday people can be advocates in their communities. Everyday people can see things that are being done. I know we just had the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington last year, and some you may or may not know that my mother and my parents and my aunt and uncle, my aunt was the one who had fallen into the Lincoln the reflecting pool back to when the original March on Washington.
Oh wow!
So they have an iconic picture that was in jet and ebony and all over the world practically, and my mother and my aunt came back and they were interviewed all over the place. But one of the things that struck me during the course of some of their interviews that resonated in their households was that we were there so that it would create a better world for our children. That's why they're at the original March on Washington. That's why they fought so hard. And that's the same sentiment today. You know, you, Janae, do what you do. Corey, you do what you do. We do what we do here so that we can create a better opportunity, a better legacy, a better vision for ourselves and our children's children than our parents had for us. It's the continuum. It's not a stop. It's perpetual. And all too often, I think, as a community, we think, oh, we've accomplished it. It's done. You know, what's next?
There's a great quote from Coretta Scott King that says, and I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. But it says something along the lines of justice and progress are not they're not continual, so they're one with every generation, mm-hmm. and so there is this constant fight, because as much as we have achieved, there are people who would like to see us, you know, return to the olden days and go back, and that was, you know, a recurring theme through the 2012 elections. You had people on the right saying we want to go back, we want to take our country back, and there was that theme of going backwards that mm-hmm. wasn't explicit, but a lot of us wondered, well, taking us back to where?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've seen repeals on some of the women's rights in Texas. I just had a conversation yesterday with someone from Planned Parenthood talking about the regression in the state of Texas and how women are dying because they are taking pills that they find at a flea market in order to have an abortion. And it's something that is so heinous that we would be in 2014 and dealing with issues that we've dealt with in the 1950s and the 1940s and at times, you know, that seem to have been a long time ago, and we've seemed like we've progressed so much. But I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot that we still have to fight for. You think about voting rights specifically. It's the key to all other issues. And we know right now there's a vacancy in the Voting Rights Act. We know that new legislation has been introduced. But even that needs to be amended so that it really does protect all of the communities that have the right to vote, and that's everyone. And so, you know, there's a lot that we can do there. With you had Attorney General Holder talking about felon reenfranchisement.
Janae, we want to hold that.
Sure.
We're done for the day. We're
going
to get you back on, and we'll continue that. But thank you very much for joining us today,
thank
both
you so
Janae
much.
And Corey. And have a good day.
We're on lunch hour. Talking about what you want to be talking about. Light Fare.
With a serious spin. Whether it be sports, faith, parenting.
Balance, relationships, education, community. Coaching.
Starting over. How do you reboot yourself?
Ministry. Relevant, resonant, and real.
Whatever it is, we want to talk about it.
Call in. Ask us questions. Be anonymous.
Senior moments.
What would you tell your teenage self?
Whatever it is, join us on Wednesdays.
Wildin' Out Wednesdays?
Absolutely.
Join us. I'm Jackie.
I'm Karen.
Write it down. 1450 AM, WOL.
Noon to 1.